I am Kevin Rounds, sitting in for Michael Knight on the agenda. And he made sure I had an easy one today because it's tax tips day. And Sean Patton from Cordell Nair is here. Good afternoon, Sean.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
We're excited because I tell you what, I've got my W-2, I've got my HSA, I've got my school loans, I've got all kinds of stuff going. And I'd imagine a lot of people are starting to get the notifications or the physical documents themselves in terms of what they need to know. By the way, before we get too far into this, I'm going to get too far into this if I don't stop. If you have a question for Sean today, give us a call, 663-5656. Any tax tip-related questions that you have at any time, just give us a call, 663-5656. But anyways, as I was saying, we are, you know, it's getting to the end of January, which is the time frame in which people start getting all this documentation. And there's a lot of questions around that right now in terms of where we can go from here. But let's start with the biggest and most obvious one. And what is so far the shutdown? They've started to deal with IRS and trying to figure out how the IRS is going to work in all of this. What do we know or what do we think we know in terms of when we can start dealing with taxes and getting that stuff filed if we want to?
Good questions. I don't necessarily have all of the answers, but I've got most of them, I think. Number one, you're right. We're getting towards the end of January here, and that's the due date for 1099s, W-2s, you know, all those types of forms. So everybody should start, you know, to be receiving those in the mail if they haven't already, which for a lot of people is the majority of the documentation that they need to round up for tax time. So to your point, even though the government's shut down, you know, everybody should still continue business as usual, collecting all their information and getting it all put together as soon as possible. The filing starting point is going to be on Monday. At least that's what the IRS announced on January 7th. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. So people will be able to electronically file tax returns starting on Monday the 28th. They have announced that refunds will not be delayed as a part of that, even though they remain in a partial shutdown mode as well. So that's the good news for taxpayers. If you are early and getting your information and getting it all filed, refunds shouldn't be held up as a result of this shutdown, which I think is people's biggest question if they are going to file early.
Is that kind of common? Do you think that if you think you're going to get a refund, you're out there, you're there on like February 1st with your tax documentation in hand, whereas if you think you're going to owe money, you have a tendency to wait till somewhere mid-April?
You bet. Well, I mean, if you know you're going to receive a large refund or have a feeling that you are, and everybody should, you know, calculate that out to see where they're at. You're giving the IRS an interest-free loan all year, essentially, if you've got a large refund. So the goal that we, you know, try and help clients with, some people just like to receive a large refund. I mean, it makes them, you know, feel good, which is great, and that's fine. But, you know, as the goal that we try and do is try and get clients around, you know, maybe owing $1,000 or receiving $1,000 within that amount so that, you know, you don't owe too much. You know, you're not shocked when you file your tax return, nor are you receiving a huge refund, which means that you had the money in your pocket the whole time, not in the government's pocket, and so you got to choose what to do with your money all year, not them. So that's kind of, you know, one of the things that we try and help strategize for clients and try and get that as close as possible. But this year's interesting, of course, because we had the changes in tax laws starting in 2018, which meant changes in withholding for a lot of individuals and taxpayers. And that calculation may not have been, you know, as great as they were hoping. IRS sent out several notifications, you know, during the spring, summer, et cetera, once they started noticing that withholdings may be lower than what they should be, even though we're going to see a reduction in taxes for most individuals as a part of this, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. If your withholding goes down further than your reduction in tax liability, you may have been receiving a refund in the past, and now you're going to owe some tax, and that's not going to feel to the average taxpayer like they're paying less taxes because they're writing a check rather than getting a refund, right?
Absolutely. And I've always thought that you nailed what I've always thought was my theory, and I've never been able to execute, but it's a theory that at some point in my life I want to do, which is you want to kind of break as close to even as possible. And then if you can calculate it properly, and obviously it's going to be hard to calculate it to the penny, But if you can calculate it properly, you take the money that you would essentially be getting in a refund and put it on a monthly basis into some sort of interest-bearing account. And then not only are you not giving the government an interest-free loan, you're saving and making money on your money instead of letting the government make money on their on your money. And that has always made sense to me. And one of these days I'll get it to execute, but right now it's just in my head.
Exactly. Wait, hey, easier said than done, you know, for a lot of us, me included. It's a moving target, right? And so you're never going to hit it exactly on the penny. But the more planning you do, especially towards the year end, you know, November, December, that time's already passed now for this year, but tip for next year, you know, for individuals is as you get closer to the year, start to plan for what your numbers are going to look like. If you're a, you know, W-2 wage earner with a salary, you can, you know, peg at that time where your salary is going to be, hopefully get a bonus at year end or something like that. But you can, for the most part, strategize where you're going to be, what your withholding is to date, start to plug in some of those figures and estimate where you're going to be at and try and get as close as possible. I think that's the goal. You're never going to be right on.
Now, while I have you here, I haven't set my appointment yet to start our taxes, but my wife and I did buy a home this year, which I know many other people have probably done. I don't know how many folks listening to the agenda have done it. Hopefully some folks have. It's always an exciting and fun thing to do in your life. But one of the things I need to know as somebody who bought a home in the 2018 tax year.
Great question. I'll ask a couple of questions back. Is this the first home purchase you've had?
Yes.
So you're not selling a home and then buying a new one. So in the first, home purchase, you got a couple things. Number one, if you paid cash for the house, you don't have any debt, so there's no deductible mortgage interest, but you're going to have real estate taxes on the home. And, you know, those two things are really the main items related to a home purchase that you're going to have that might be applicable to that tax return, assuming we're talking about a personal residence, and you are. So, but if you do have a loan on the home, you're going to have an interest rate that you're paying the bank most likely, and that interest is still deductible, contrary to popular belief with the new tax law that all our itemized deductions went away. Well, that's not true. We can still deduct real estate taxes. We can still deduct mortgage interest. There are new limits. There are new thresholds, et cetera, for doing so. But you want to have all that information gathered so that you can calculate it and then make the best calculation for yourself. If you can itemize or if you're going to take the standard deduction, you're going to want to take what's higher.
Yeah, which is $24,500
this? Married filing joint, $24,000.
$24,000.
Yep, and then $12,000 for a single individual.
All right, we got a phone call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the agenda. Who is this?
Hi, my name's Steve.
All right, Steve, you got a question for Sean?
Hi, Steve.
Yeah, I took a course at the end of October, beginning of November, that was required in order to get licensed for a business I'm going to start in March. And I was told that the fee for that course was deductible. I was just wondering if I can roll it into next year rather than take it this year.
Good question. Well, we are a cash basis taxpayer, so generally as individuals, we're going to take deductions in the year that items are paid for. However, you mentioned a couple of things here. You're going to start your own business, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so you're not going to be employed by anybody else. If you were and you took that course, we used to have some 2% miscellaneous itemized deductions for items that were paid for that were unreimbursed by employers. We don't have those anymore in 2018. So for people that are employed by somebody else, unfortunately, you're out of luck, and you used to be able to maybe take that deduction in 2017 and before, again, if you could itemize and subject to some limits. But again, in your situation, if you're starting up your own business, you have some costs that are business startup costs going into the next year. And so depending on how you decide to account for your business, maybe on an accrual basis or cash basis, and I don't know what type of entity you're going to have, if it's going to be a sole proprietorship or an LLC, maybe you've elected for S corporation status, et cetera. All depends, but it sounds like you've got some business startup costs possibly that you could capitalize and then amortize or even use some of the rules for expensing those startup costs in the next year even though you know, you haven't technically started getting any income. Have you filed for that new business yet with the state of Washington, assuming you're here in the state?
Not yet. I'm still got a couple of hoops to jump through, and then I'm hoping to get it started in March. But because I took the course, you know, in the last year, I was just hoping that I could maybe, you know, roll that, the cost of the course, which was pretty expensive, into, you know, my business expense for next year.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, since you haven't started the business and haven't started earning any income, it becomes a little more difficult. Like I said, you might be able to fall under that startup costs, rule where you can kind of, keep and capitalize some of those costs. At this point, though, you haven't started the business. So it's kind of a personal expense, in order to get, you know, prepped or eligible, I suppose, to start your business, depending on what that is. I'm not sure if that's the case.
Yeah, it was a course that was required by the state in order to sit for a licensing exam.
Got it. So yeah, in that case, again, you may be able to under some of those startup cost rules, but you haven't started the business quite yet. Haven't started, you know, earning any income. And so you'd want to start there and look at that. But there's no place, obviously, for you to, you know, deduct that expense on your 2018 tax return, since you haven't, you know, technically started that business.
Right. Yeah. That's, well, I kind of figured that, but I was just hoping that I could roll that cost into the 19 year, because that's when I will have the business going. So.
Again, so yep, you got two things. You got those startup costs, and then you've also got, if you elected on the accrual basis, you might have potentially a prepaid expense that you have on your balance sheet there before year end that you might be able to expense in 2019 when you start the business, because the license was necessary for you to start the business. And as we know, business deductions are there for people that are in business and trying to make money, and you, if you took that expense for earning that income, then you might be able to do that. So you got a couple of options there that you want to look into as far as making that an expense in 2019.
Okay, well, thank you.
You bet.
Thanks, Steve. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Sean Patton from Cordell-Nair. If you have questions for him, by all means, give us a call, 509-663-5656, and Sean will be happy to answer them for you. I'm Kevin Rounds, filling in for Michael Knight on The Agenda.
At KPQ.com.
This is Radio 560 KPQ. Time is 12:32. I am Kevin Rounds, sitting in for Michael Knight on The Agenda today. My very special guest is Sean Patton. I don't know where I was going with the B there, but Sean Patton from Cordell-Nair. And if you have a question on your taxes or anything related to the very fun time of year, hopefully for you, just give us a call, 663-5656, and Sean will be happy to answer them for you. And Sean, I know that a lot of folks out there, like myself, have taken out their student loans, and they're still working to pay those off. It seems like we spend our lives paying our student loans. what do people need to know when it comes to tax time? I get a sheet, I hand it to the tax preparer. That's about the extent of what I know. But I'm sure many people are looking for more information when it comes to exactly how student loans fit into taxes.
Yep, good question. You know, student loans, but though are very common, and you're, you know, paying interest on those student loans, so that loan interest can be taken as a deduction above the line on your tax return, and so that's been around for a long time, still exists under those new tax rules. So you'll be able to you'll get a 1098 form. That shows what the student loan interest that you paid for the year is. So if you've got multiple loans, you'll want to collect those up, total those up, and take that deduction on your return. It is limited, so you're only going to get up to a specified amount. But you just want to make sure and incorporate all those and be sure to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I'll be a hard, well, that's what my job has always been, just to print what is mine. I used to do my own taxes when I used to just get I could just fill out the 1040 easy form, and I had one W-2, and I just would take it, and I could, it was just me, and I had no other, and I never made anything else other than what was ever on my W-2s, whether I had one or two. And so it's getting a lot more complicated now that I've gotten older. And so it's always a challenge to find out exactly what it is. And so that's good to know, though. I mean, yeah, student loan interest has been long, and I can imagine that it's been a long time. And even then, when they were talking about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, there was probably never a conversation to change it, because that's something that so many people have.
Yeah, good question. I mean, I don't know if it was on the table or not, but it would have been unpopular, I'm sure, if it was removed. It costs a lot to, you know, for everybody to go to college and go to school, and a lot of people need to incur, you know, debt to be able to do that. So it's nice to have a little bit of a tax break, you know, when we pay back that debt and pay on that interest incurred. So, as I mentioned, you're going to get up to $2,500, you know, as a deduction in 2018. And so you want to add all those up. Like I said, if you're over that, you're just going to get, you know, the max, of the $2,500. And then there are some phase outs as far as your income goes. So the higher your income goes, the less in student loan deduction you're going to be able to take. So at some point, they're saying, hey, even though you're having to pay student loan interest, you're making enough money to where we're not going to give you that deduction anymore. So you've got that, you know, in there as well that you got to look out for.
You're a doctor. You could afford it, right?
I'm guessing where they're going with that. Yep.
So here's a question that just came to me, and while it's not something that necessarily impacts me, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people out there that have that question. So let's say you're one of the furloughed workers, and your pay essentially stopped as of December 23rd. Now, that's a full 8 days left in the year, in the tax year. Are there ways that you can approach that? Because you are technically going to get paid for that time at some point once the shutdown gets over, and assuming the shutdown ends before April, you will theoretically maybe get that back pay, so where you can get the full amount and or know exactly what your salary was last year. How do people who maybe have been furloughed and trying to deal with that kind of uncertainty, how should they go forward?
Well, remember, we're cash basis taxpayers. So in general, we're just going to pay taxes on the income that we received in that year. So, you know, I'm not for sure on how they're going to handle that. I've heard that, you know, people are going to get paid, right, for the time that they've been out of work. But I would assume that'll be taxable income to them in 2019, even though that might have been related to some days in 2018, because they didn't actually get the money. They didn't receive their paycheck. So it's, you know, a bit unfair, right, for them to have to pay taxes on dollars in 2018 that they never got. So I would assume that would be taxable income to them in 2019 and would go on their 2019 W-2, you know, not what they planned on, obviously, for those 7 days. But there's a lot of cutoff issues anyway, right, for depending on what your employer's pay period is. You know, you might get paid on the 5th and 20th of every, you know, month, for example. So a lot of people then essentially got paid on the 20th. That's your last paycheck. That's the last amount that's going to go into your income. Even though you worked for 10 days towards the end of the year, that's not going to fall into the paycheck on the next year. So it's a little similar to that, because essentially you had 10 days in the prior year that you worked, but you got paid for in the current year. So everything all works out. You know, assuming you're there for the entire year and whatnot. That's just how the timing works. For us, we're going to pay taxes on the income we receive in that period on a cash basis.
So it's not when we were earning the income, it's when we receive the income. So, like, if I did all the work in the last week of December, it doesn't matter that I did that work. It matters for tax purposes. Like, if I got paid on the 3rd or whatever day I got paid, that says, oh, you got paid on the 3rd? That's 2019. But it's for the work in 2018. Now, we don't care.
Yep.
It's the work you got paid in 2019.
That's right. So constructive receipt to you, your cash basis. You got that money in 2019. That's going to be includable in your 2019 income. For businesses that have the ability to accrue revenue rather than they have the option, you can. Many businesses have the option of either, you know, cash basis, taxpayer, business taxpayer, or accrual basis. So if you're an accrual basis, that would be different. That would be when you earn the income rather than when you receive the cash. And so you have the option there. But individuals in general are cash basis taxpayers, and so you're gonna pay income tax when you receive the money.
And as we get close to this kind of end of the month, and I know a lot of folks are dealing with trying to collect their tax forms, and what are some of the things that they need to be making sure that they're getting a hold of? What are some of the things they need to make sure that they have before they can start looking to set their appointments with their tax preparer, if that's the route they go?
Good question. Depends on everybody's different situation, okay, right, as to what they have. But, you know, you want to, if you're going to a tax preparer, most tax preparers are going to send their clients, as we do, unless the client has elected out of it, to receive an organizer, which is kind of a checklist, right, from prior years on what they had. And that checklist helps them gather information in the current year, knowing that, well, I had this last year, assuming all things are the same and equal, I'm going to have it again this year. And so it helps you go through that list and kind of check those items off so you can make sure to have them. It's really up to the taxpayer to remember the things, right, that you did differently in the current year that might be relevant for tax purposes. Now, if you're going into a professional, a tax preparer, they're going to ask you questions as well to help jog your memory and, you know, bring some of those things up to make sure nothing's missed. But, you know, we all want to have some type of filing system. We've talked about that before on the radio. You know, anytime you think you've done anything or received anything that might be applicable come tax time, you know, make sure and file that away. Put that away somewhere where you know you're going to need it in the future and can find it easily. That way you're unlikely to forget it.
We're going to take a break. Let's take a call. We got one person calling in. Good afternoon. You're on the agenda. Who's this?
This is Wayne.
Wayne, you got a question for Sean?
Hi, Wayne.
I do.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I had a property that I sold in 2017 at a loss. It was about $33,000 loss. I reported that on my 2018 taxes and was given a $3,000 credit for that. And carrying that over into my 2018 taxes, I wanted to find out how I list that in there. Do I show the loss, the $33,000 less $3,000 for another $3,000 credit?
Great question. You're talking about capital losses, and assume this was a business property of some sort that you sold, or you can even take this example to, you know, the stock market as well. Any type of capital asset that you hold is going to be a capital gain or loss. And since you had a loss that exceeded $3,000 last year, and no other gains, I'm going to assume, because we'll just use this as an example. If you had other gains, that would offset that loss. So it's possible you could have taken more of the loss, but you can only take $3,000 above all the gains that you had. So if your original
gains.
Great. So if your original loss was $33,000, then you got $3,000 in 2017.
Right.
Okay, so your carryover capital loss is $30,000.
Okay. And where do I list that?
That's going to go on Schedule D as well, where you reported the original loss in 2017.
Okay.
Okay. And there's a spot for a carryover, and there's both short-term and long-term sections. If you're using tax software, that should have carried that forward for you in the proper spot, of course, assuming that you entered it in the proper spot. But there's both short-term and long-term. I'll just assume that the property you held it for more than a year, so your loss is all long-term, okay? So that loss carry forward is going to go in the long-term section of Schedule D.
Okay.
And there's a carryover section, and you're going to have $30,000 in there, but you're going to be limited to the $3,000 that's going to be deductible in 2018, and then you're going to have $27,000 that you're going to carry forward into the future years.
Sure, and until that's $3,000 bites of it are done.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but if you had any other good opportunity, if you have any other capital assets that might have some appreciation, and you need to diversify, you might want to harvest some of those gains, right, against those losses. It's not going to be immediately taxable to you because you're going to be able to offset those gains with the long-term capital loss that you carried forward from previous years. So it might be a good tax planning opportunity for you going forward if you do have other capital assets with long-term gains.
Yeah, I do not. My software is asking for the AMT amount for that. Is that going to be the same? Where would I find the AMT amount that I fill in for that?
Good question. That's referring to alternative minimum tax is the AMT. You know, depending on your level of income, AMT may or may not apply. I'm going to assume that the AMT loss for you is going to be the same. It's dependent on your situation, but I'm going to assume that it's the same. So, even, you know, it should be the same amount as your, you know, the amounts you're carrying forward and the amounts you're deducting, et cetera. But it may not apply for you overall, unless you're somebody that pays, are you somebody who pays alternative minimum tax?
No.
Okay. So, you know, it's not going to hurt you not having it in there, but it'll carry forward correctly if you do have it in both places in case in the future you ever did have AMT. You might be able to offset some of that AMT income with that carry forward loss. So it is important to include it.
Okay.
All right?
All right. I think that answered my question. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call.
All right. Thanks, Wayne. Have a good day.
Thanks, Wayne.
Goodbye.
All right, well, let's go ahead and take that break now, and when we come back, we'll finish up our conversation with Sean Patton of Cordell Nair.
At KPQ.com.
News Radio 560 KPQ. Kevin Rounds filling in for Michael on the agenda. Marshall's on the line with a question for Sean.
Yeah, hi, Sean. I've been depreciating some computers and some, well, basically computers, laptops, and desktops over time, and if the rules changed, and can I finish depreciating them all out? There's still several years left on them.
Good question. So, yeah, you've already got that property placed in service in past years, I assume.
Correct. And prior to 2018.
Gotcha, yep. And typically those computers, those, you know, types of electronics are going to be depreciated over 5 years unless you elected to expense them in the year you placed them into service.
I did not.
Right. So, unfortunately, no. Anything new that you bought, you could certainly take advantage of the new rules, whether it be, you know, 100% bonus depreciation or, you know, Section 179, whatever code you're using to expense those assets in 1 year. But something that you've already started, you're not going to be able to take advantage of those rules because you didn't purchase them in the current year.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. You bet.
All right. Thanks, Marshall. And Sean, thank you so much. I know folks always get a little intimidated by taxes, so if they have questions or want to reach out and maybe have you guys do it, how can they get a hold of you?
You bet. They can give us a call at our office, 663-1661, or call us on the radio each week. Tim will be back next week to answer everybody's questions.
Yeah, Dilly Dilly's back next week. I'm sure he loves that.
That's right.
I told him I wouldn't do that to his face. And that's as far as I went committing to that. There was no saying I won't ever do it. But yes, you can always reach out to Cordell Nair. Or next Thursday at 12:15, Tim Dilley will be back to visit with Michael and the next version of Tax Tips. And every Thursday at 12:15 throughout the tax year. And I can't think of any other. I can't think of any holidays or anything that would interrupt that at 12:00. I think we're pretty much set for 12:00.
Yep, not for me. No holidays until after April 15th. But I think, yeah, we're set every week, and Tim and I rotate on and off each week. So.
And I'd imagine it's probably not even holidays until probably you get closer into the summer, because there's always the people that are kind of after the deadline that are still trying to get everything figured out. So.
Very true. There's still work to be done even after the April 15th deadline passes.
Is it the 15th this year, or is it?
It is actually the 15th this year. Yeah, we've been kind of
like
off of that schedule for a while. Yeah,
okay.
Because of the 15th falling on a weekend. But I believe it falls on a weekday this year, so it's actually going to be the 15th.
All right, Sean, thanks so much. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and we'll see you back in a couple weeks.
You bet. Sounds good.